Welcome to the Federal IT Challenge. In this episode, we're going to get into the little history of federal technology management and then figure out where the government goes from here. Kind of a look back, look ahead. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware US Public Sector. Welcome, Doug, as always.
Thank you very much.
Well, let me start by setting a little context to our discussion today. The two seminal laws that have set the path for federal IT, the Clinger-Cohen Act of 1996 and the E-Government Act of 2002, were hailed at their signings as game changers, something that the federal community has needed and has been waiting for. When President Bill Clinton signed the Defense Authorization Act of 1996, which included what was then known as the IT Management Reform Act, included those provisions, now commonly known as the Clinger-Cohen Act, he wrote this as part of his signing statement to the bill. The legislation gives agencies enhanced authority and flexibility in the use of computers and telecommunications while insisting on accountability. Consistent with the administration's efforts under the National Performance Review to create a government that works better and costs less, the act encourages agencies to adopt the best practices of successful companies in the private sector. And the act includes measures to facilitate the purchase of commercially available goods and services to streamline and clarify. Sounds familiar. I bet OMB has repeated those words many times over the past decade. Now let's fast forward 6 years later. November 2002, President George W. Bush signs the E-Government Act. E-Government Act was supposed to bring the federal IT into the 21st century. You know, the internet, the exciting world of ubiquitous computing, and of course, cybersecurity. In that signing statement, President Bush says, "This legislation builds upon my administration's expanding e-government initiative by ensuring strong leadership of the information technology activities of federal agencies, a comprehensive framework for information security standards and programs, and uniform safeguards to protect the confidentiality of information provided by the public for statistical purposes. The act also will assist in expanding the use of the internet and computer resources in order to deliver government services consistent with the reform principles I outlined on July 10, 2002, for a citizen-centered, results-oriented, market-based government." Here we are 10 years later. Everything has changed again. Not quite Moore's law in terms of speed, but mobile, cloud, cybersecurity, federal agencies are struggling to keep up. The Obama administration and Congress recognize the changing IT landscape and has pushed forward initiatives to address it. And that is what we'll talk about today. So with that context in place, let me turn back to Doug Bourgeois. He's the Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Now, Doug, Clinger-Cohen Act, E-Government Act, two laws that have set the tone for federal IT. Let's talk a little bit. Have they really made a difference?
They've clearly made a difference. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that they were game changers, although in the long run, you probably could say to some degree they have changed the game. And it's interesting to note that, you know, when I first came into the government from the private sector in 2001, you know, the very first thing that I saw that came down the pike was the E-Gov Act of 2002 from that vantage point. So I definitely lived the execution implementation of that. But let me start with this. Clinger-Cohen, since it was first, it made a difference in a couple of very key areas. I think first was establishing the CIO role and strengthening the CIO authority clearly made a difference in terms of the ability for agencies to carry out IT and electronic type of activities. And then second, it was very prescriptive with respect to capital planning processes and a mission-based approach to architecture, which in the end were also effective in helping to advance the use of technology throughout agencies. And then the second piece of legislation, the E-Gov Act, clearly and without, in my view, any doubt, the main contribution there was the advancement of IT security, including the development of security standards, privacy, and an overall framework for operationalizing security. So clearly those were the advancements of both of those pieces of legislation.
One of the things that people always point to when you talk about Clinger-Cohen and e-government is really setting the tone forward. But there's a lot of frustration with it. Did it really have the impact it was intended to? I mean, if you talk to people like Mark Forman, the e-gov administrator at OMB, who was the first one that came with that title under the E-Government Act of 2002, or someone like Paul Brubaker, who he was on the Hill and helped write the Clinger-Cohen Act, they'll tell you the frustration has been it hasn't quite been implemented the way Congress wanted it to. And I guess the question is, what has been so hard? Is it the turning of the battleship that it just takes a long time? Or is it what?
Well, it's more than turning of the battleship. And I don't want to sound like I'm splitting hairs or walking a fine line here, because I do believe that these pieces of legislation did significantly advance the cause and the usage and the success of IT across government. That said, I also agree with the premise of this question. They did fall short of accomplishing what was intended or what the hope was of what the folks that created and approved the legislation thought they were going to get. In particular, and I think you alluded to it in how you asked the question, neither piece really addressed best practices in execution. And I think from that vantage point, it's a fine line between over-legislating, you know, the prescriptive approach versus laying out a framework and letting the agencies operationalize it. But it was in the operationalization, you know, how it was executed, how both pieces of legislation were executed, where things fell short. In particular, the approach to FSMA with respect to the eGov Act was far too much check the box for too many years. So agencies were expending tremendous resources at completing forms and documents and checking the box, we did this, rather than focusing on a risk-based approach to security across their environments. And then second, with respect to Klinger-Cohen, it did not really integrate the roles of the CIO, the CFO, and the chief procurement officer, the CPO, very well, which in my experience were programs that really transformed operations in the government were very, very successful. All three were working in concert together as part of a team. And that was more an environment that was set up within the particular agency than it was across the government.
When you look back, and is the blame, if you will, put the blame on whom, is it as much of the agencies as Congress? I mean, was there a lack of oversight? If you think about who the proponents of the Klinger-Cohen Act, the proponents of the E-Government Act, Joe Lieberman, who was the main author of that bill, but also Tom Davis. Tom Davis left shortly after the E-Government Act was passed, you know, as it got kind of going and got the head of steam. I mean, he was around for several years, but really it takes any type of legislation takes a long time to get going. You know, both Klinger and Cohen were out of Congress fairly soon after the law got passed. Is it Congress's fault as much as the agency's fault, meaning the agency had to change, but Congress needed to apply that tougher oversight? Or is it just the culture change that we always seem to talk about?
Without trying to avoid the question, I think it's some of all. And it's in hindsight, you know, it tends to be 2020. And I'm not going to sit here and criticize the efforts of Tom Davis because I think he's done a masterful job throughout his career. In fact, I, you know, was honored to testify before the Congress, you know, with him a few weeks ago. But I would say that, yes, the Congress failed in terms of some aspects that were omitted from the legislation that would have helped guide the implementation in a more consistent manner. And you could say maybe even some very targeted performance metrics for the outcomes of what they intended to keep the expansive operational environments throughout all of the agencies across the government focused on achieving those results. And then that said, there clearly is a massive cultural shift required anytime you're trying to change the game through legislation that requires consistent execution and leadership to change that culture. And I think that was another area where the agencies kind of fell down.
Do you think that industry was able to change their culture because of the profit motive, meaning they saw the return on investment by having the CIO work with the CFO and the chief acquisition person? And for government, this is something we've heard time and again, the profit motive is just not there. So it's harder to bring those three parties together.
Without a doubt, that's clearly a factor. But it's not, in my view, it's not so much that it's a profit motive versus not a profit motive. I think having the profit motive, it's a very singular, focused objective. There's no ambiguity about achieving profit, right? You increase revenues, you lower costs, and you improve your margin. And that's going to lead to success over time in your business. When you get to the government, mission success is one, much more difficult to define than the profit motive would. And then it's also varies widely by agency and operational component within agency. So it becomes a very fragmented kind of methodology that's necessary to align the IT efforts with the intended results for the mission. That makes it more difficult.
The other piece is we've seen the IT budget go up, go up, go up, increase by leaps and bounds. I think the Office of Management and Budget talked about they froze IT spending in 2009, but before that, the rate of increase was something like 12 or 13% a year, compounded over and over. I remember when I first started covering this, the IT budget was like 50 or 54 billion, and it got all the way up to about 80 billion. Do you think that because the budgets kept increasing, the pressure wasn't there to work more closely with acquisition and finance to consolidate, to be more effective with IT to deliver on mission?
It's really a side effect, the fact that the costs of IT continued to go up, but the intended results weren't actually realized. I go back to my earlier statement of the CIO, the CFO, and the CPO working together within an operational framework. And actually, the enterprise architecture methodologies of the Clean Air Cohen Act were intended to do just this. They were intended to accomplish that alignment underneath the major objective umbrella of what is the intended mission outcome. The execution was very less than effective in doing that. And that's why I go back to say that in the private sector, you know, those business objectives are very clear. Where I have had success in the government, such as at the patent office, was where the objectives from the top, in this case, the undersecretary, were extremely clear. We were going to reduce patent pendency. We were going to increase the productivity of the patent workforce, and we were going to lower costs. And those are the three things we're going to do. You team, my team of senior executives, get it done. Figure it out. And I'm going to be here. Tell me what you need. And it's not that clear across many agencies.
And you never heard the word enterprise architecture in any of that conversation. So no eyes were glazed over. Nobody started trying to hide under their desks, right?
It's one of the things you've learned very quickly in the IT leadership arena is that as soon as you mention, by the time you've gotten the word architecture out of your mouth, the eyes are, in fact, glazed over and nobody wants to listen anymore. And it's unfortunate because when practiced pragmatically and aligned to the mission, enterprise architecture is actually extremely successful methodology. It just was overblown and became kind of off track.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into where we're going next. You're listening to the Federal IT Challenge, brought to you by VMware, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and I'm speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic is IT reform. Where do we go next?
Discover virtualization best practices on storage, networking, performance, and security with VMware at VMware.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Federal IT Challenge, brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and I'm speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic is IT reform. Where do we go next? Now, Doug, before break, we talked a little bit about the history of the E-Government Act, the Clean Air Cohen Act, and the impact those two laws have had on federal IT management. The roadmap going forward, is it getting more clear for government when you talk about cloud and mobile and big data? Those are pretty disruptive technologies. So are they really changing the pathway, the planning that's has been going on for so many years because of how they disrupt how technology is used and how people use data to get their mission done?
Well, I think those advancements in technology clearly are setting the stage for a new approach. And as you said, kind of making the path more clear, because each of those technologies that you mentioned have a very kind of rapid deployment, very fluid scenario now compared to the way technology was done even 3-4 years ago, and certainly a decade ago when the original pieces of legislation were put in place. So I do think because of it is a very complex environment in general, the federal government IT landscape, and there's a lot of pieces to it, it does require some overarching themes in order to keep the guideposts, if you will, to guide the overall execution. So I would say three main areas that really need to be focused on, and there's a lot of detail associated with each one. The first is just simplify. And there's two key perspectives here. The IT environments themselves, by virtue of the technologies that were put in place years ago, that what we've talked about in the past on some of the Federal IT Challenge programs, are how applications were married to servers, were married to storage, all in a vertical approach that was very siloed, we call it, and very, you know, wasteful in terms of how effectively those resources were used. The environment itself needs to continue to be consolidated, the massive IT complex environment. But also the processes used to acquire these technologies needs to be simplified as well. And my point here is with virtualization, cloud computing, mobile technologies, and so on, the cycle time for the ability to adapt and use those technologies is measured now in weeks, if not days. But still, the procurement cycle is measured in months, if not years. And this misalignment is wreaking havoc across the federal IT landscape. That said, the second area is expertise. And again, I bifurcate that, say that the advancements in technology, which has always moved at a very rapid pace, and next generation of technology tends to take about 18 months in general, the expertise of the government workforce, both from a technology standpoint and from a procurement standpoint, really has been hampered by the ever so difficult and increasingly difficult budget situation, because training budgets tends to be one of the first ones to get thrown out the window. And then that kind of creates this gap between the expertise and then where the technologies are. And that has certainly taken place in the last year or two. And then the third major area is just the culture in general. It always comes down to the culture. And the bottom line is if you are attempting to transform something significant like the massive IT infrastructure in IT environment across the federal government, culture has to be a major consideration of gradual transformation as well. A
couple of things let me follow up with you on. Let me start with the simplification. This administration has taken several steps to meet that goal of simplification. If you think about data center consolidation, they always talk about, yeah, we're going to shut down data centers, but in the end, it's using better what you have. They talk about cloud in terms of moving into one email. There's the consolidation piece, the simplification of how to run an email system. Are those steps too small, meaning those are all the low-hanging fruit, and now they have to look beyond that? Or there's a path, and that's just the first road that they took?
Those steps were not too small. They were, in fact, the initial steps towards the overall objective. And by that, I'm saying that the initial consolidation efforts that have taken place have produced some substantial savings as a result. Across the holistic picture, I do believe, if I'm quoting the numbers correctly, GAO had fairly recently issued a report saying that somewhere in the order of $5 billion will be saved by, I think, by the end of 2013 because of the data center consolidation initiative. And that is, in fact, a wonderful start, but there's so much more potential out there. So the consolidation, which generally has occurred at the server level because of the technologies that, such as virtualization and cloud computing, that enable that consolidation to happen, need to be pushed further down into the infrastructure. And by that, I mean the storage infrastructure needs to be virtualized and consolidated as well. And technologies now exist for the network to also go through that same process. And when that happens, the baselines that we got from server consolidation are 60% reductions in capital expenditures, around a third reduction in operating expenses, and even, you know, more substantial, somewhere in the order of 30 to 40% decrease in downtime for mission critical applications. These benefits will accrue to the rest of the infrastructure.
Over the next 6 months or so, we're going to see the next generation of IT reform start to pop up. Congressman Daryl Issa, chairman of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, has issued a proposed piece of legislation that a lot of people have commented on. He held a hearing recently. I think you testified there. Is Mr. Issa's bill going down the right path? Are there things in there that are going to change the way agencies manage IT, very similar to the way Clinger-Cohen and eGov changed the way agencies managed IT?
Clearly, one thing that's exciting about Congressman Issa's reform bill, FITARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, is that the timing is that it's been more than a decade since the last substantial IT reform legislation has been passed, and so it's about time for a similar type of transformation. In addition, there's some really key aspects of this bill that are very encouraging. One is very broad coverage, which is required to attack a very complex issue. And so that is a positive, is a plus for that. It also takes on the bigger issues of process and, in particular, IT acquisition with an attempt to bring the acquisition environment, you know, more to a current times, to be more consistent with the capabilities that technology has brought to the marketplace. And it also addresses some of the cultural issues, such as the role of the CIO and some of the authorities there to help that role from an IT program management perspective be more effective. So there's a lot of positives that are set forth in this particular bill.
Do you think that Congressman Issa, by putting the proposed draft out earlier and getting the comments from people in industry and academia and people in government, he's trying not to make maybe the same mistakes, maybe fall into the same potholes, is maybe a better way to say it, that Clinger-Cohen and e-government did?
I think there's several aspects of the approach of gathering input from a broad audience that are going to be advantageous for this particular piece of legislation. One is just like you described, is to see and try and anticipate the unknowns of how to make it more effective and to get a very, very broad, you know, perspective on what, you know, needs to be done to improve it. But secondarily to that, in terms of the potential of execution, it also gives those that are necessary both within government and outside government in the vendor community to be able to anticipate what the changes might mean for them and to be able to start thinking much more in advance about how to work within that environment in the most effective manner. So it's somewhat of a, hey, you know, this is what's coming. Let's make it work. Let's figure out where the shortcomings are. Let's improve it and kind of let's think about the big picture and how to be successful in this overall holistic approach.
There's a lot of excitement, I think, a lot of anticipation around the IT bill. Is it going to get passed? Do you think this is something that Congress will actually pick up? I mean, cybersecurity was one of those bills everyone thought would get passed, and it kind of fell on its face for other reasons and because people didn't support cybersecurity. But is this going to have any of that controversial, all of a sudden somebody's going to come out of nowhere and say, well, we don't like this section, and therefore we're going to hold it up? Or do you think that, let's be honest here, Daryl Issa, Mr. Cummings, Mr. Connolly, maybe a, Mr. Carper, a few others, they're the only ones really paying attention here to IT and acquisition reform.
Well, it's a really good question, and I'm not sure of my ability to look into my crystal ball and to anticipate what the U.S. Congress is going to do with respect to a piece of IT legislation. But let me tell you this, before it does get passed, I do think that there are a couple of things that need to be done to it to bolster its opportunity to be successful. I do think that while I mentioned it was a positive that the piece of legislation is very broad and addresses this complex issue, on the other hand, there are areas that it does not focus enough on, such as continuing on the consolidation journey. That's one thing that Congressman Connolly has advanced, and I do think that those ideas should be merged together, and I think that there was some discussion around you know increasing that focus on continuing with the consolidation. Additionally, as I mentioned before, the areas of expertise, both in the IT side and the contracting side, have not really been addressed by the bill, and I do think that something needs to be done specifically there to advance some of the best practices that are already in place today and pockets of excellence across the government really need to be turned into broader programmatic types of an approach. And then finally, one thing that it does not do that I believe very strongly it needs to happen is it does not address the shift from an overall IT spending and investment management perspective from capital expenditures of buying equipment to operating expense in terms of acquiring services from vendors, you know, via the cloud and other access mechanisms. And that is fundamental. When you get down to the financial tools, it really comes down to this idea of something similar to working capital funds that are in use in pockets across the government. That is a model that has been in place for, you know, more than 20 years that really needs to be looked at as providing the foundational elements for this type of computing, this operating expense-based, services-based acquisition model that is really no longer in the business of acquiring hardware.
What it comes down to really is that Congressman Issa really needs to pull in the appropriators and get them to sign off on that change in approach, because it's hard for them to change how they spend that money. And I think that may be the key to this piece of legislation, the way you described it, as being a turning point.
This concept of the working capital fund and basically operating expense in general for IT is something that came out from the appropriators in terms of the authorization language that they wrote when they created these working capital funds across the government. So that is where my understanding of where the technical expertise is, and not only how to implement and authorize this type of funding mechanism, but how to ensure the appropriate level of transparency, the audit controls, the management control, and the checks and balances across the board to make sure that it's carried out in the most effective way for the good of the American taxpayer. And I think those things do need to come together for this legislation to have the most chance of being successful.
And I'll tell you, we will be paying attention to how that legislation comes together. Unfortunately, though, we are out of time for today. You've been listening to the Federal IT Challenge, brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and I've been speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic was IT reform. Where do we go next? To hear this show in its entirety and others just like it on topics such as cloud brokerage and innovating in the cloud, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.